Welcome to episode number 18. In this episode, we are joined again by Russell Sims. He recaps his hunt with Trapper in Wyoming, and then he tells us about his most recent trip to Africa. So stick around to hear all about that and enjoy.
Everybody, welcome back to Traps Lodge. I got my good buddy, hunting client, and friend Russell Sims back with us. He's going to tell us a little bit about our Wyoming hunt we did together, and then he took a trip to Africa. I want to ask him about how all that went. So, Russ, how's it been going, man?
Doing good. We've been really busy here for the last two or three months, really since the beginning of October.
Right.
So we've it's been a fast, busy fall.
Whirlwind kind of stuff, huh?
Yeah.
Because, let's see, you went to Wyoming with me opening opening day of October, and we kind of had a plan that because it was hot and elk were coming down to water, we were going to sit at water holes and kind of wait and do all this big plan. And we got up that morning, right? Was it first thing in the morning? Took a drive and then jumped you saw that big herd of elk on your side, kind of going around the mountain. And we just drove up trying to maybe catch up to them, and they came across, saw the big herd of cows coming across, and we were looking for the bull that we had seen, and there he was behind the cows, and he was right down in the bottom, and we got out fast and got on the sticks, and he was like right down below us, and he had a big old tree limb just kind of covering him up, if I remember.
Yeah, he was, we got extremely lucky because it was opening morning.
Right.
And it was probably, well, we saw a couple of other herds, but nothing with a big bull. And we saw some busted bulls.
Right,
busted
far bulls. Off, yeah.
But yeah, this one here I saw running across the mountain. And I'm like, let's get around this mountain quick and see if we can jump them. And sure enough, we caught up with them. And this big bull, he was about 100 yards down in a draw, but standing behind a tree. And he was just looking right at us.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't have a shot.
No shot there.
Yeah. He's behind the tree. And so I'm on the sticks on my knees, and you had the ranger. And then about that time, he took off running up a hill into another draw.
Right.
Back up, and you're like, okay, now he's at 200 yards.
And he just has his butt to us the whole time.
And he's trotting pretty good. And he got about out onto about a third plateau, if I remember.
Right, yeah, third flat there.
And you said he was at 300 yards.
Yeah, he's like 330 when you took the shot.
Right, but he was at 300 yards, and then he got cocky and kind of slowed down a little bit and
just barely turned. Yeah, it was a pretty hard quartering away, but just right as he turned, and he hadn't stopped walking, but he slowed way down.
Yeah.
And if he'd have gone where the cows went, we wouldn't have got a shot. No. So they just went around the other hill, and we out of sight, kind of.
Yeah, they were gone.
And then if he'd have gone to that next draw, he'd have been too far at that time, or he could have just disappeared. So right when he turned, man, I just remember him just dropping in my binos, just what doof, just hit the dirt.
Yeah, well, I there was no doubt in my mind what I was going to do. I mean, he was at 330 yards then.
Right.
And I mean, as soon as he gave me an angle on his shoulder, I lit off.
Right. Yeah.
And hit him just perfect.
It was a perfect shot. His high shoulder shot caught both lungs and spined him, knocked him straight down, and then I had to do a little bit of work to get him out. But it wasn't like a quarter up and pack out job. John came and brought the ranger, and we kind of wrapped him up in the tarp, drug him down the hill. And the hardest part was just keeping his nose off the dirt and his antlers out of the dirt.
Well, and here's what I didn't really think about or realize, and I think most hunters that have never had this experience before probably don't think about or realize, is where you shoot the animal really has a lot to do with how hard it's going to be to retrieve it.
Right, right.
And we got lucky because he was on a plateau.
Right.
But we couldn't get the truck far enough, so we had to hike up this hill about 200 yards to get to him. And then put him on a tarp and drag him back down the hill.
To get him on the truck.
Yeah. And, I mean, he was probably, what, about 850 pounds on the hoof?
Yeah, he's a big bull.
Yeah, I mean, he was heavy.
A lot of people, first-time elk hunters, don't realize just how big of an animal that is.
Yeah.
Like, how much work that is. Because even though we had the equipment, we were able to, we got him down the hill and gutted him. Or no,
we didn't gut him.
We got him on the back, rolled him on the rack, strapped him 10 ways to Sunday.
Yeah.
Drove him back to the headquarters, and John lifted him up with the skid steer. And then it was still a good 2 hours, 2.5 hours of skinning and quartering. And then we got him all quartered out and put away. But just to do that on the ground, it's tough, you know, with one or two guys. You get a lot of like rookie, you know, first time elk hunters that go walk in somewhere and kill an elk. And if it's hot, that meat's going to spoil before you can get it out, yeah. You know?
So I really had no idea exactly what we were in for. But it would be real easy to drop an elk into some place where it would be damn near impossible to get him out.
Yeah, if you can't get a horse or a pickup to him, it on your back, an elk is tough. It's a lot of trips. Two guys, it's probably going to take you 3 or 4 trips.
Yeah.
I mean, you can carry a ham per guy, then shoulder and back strap and some trimmings per guy. And then if you're going to shoulder mount, the cape and head alone, that's one trip. That's all you can carry. So probably like 5 trips total.
Yeah, but we were lucky that we were able to get the mule up, at least up to him far enough so that we could drag him back down the hill and get him to the pickup.
Right. And it was kind of funny because right after you left, we'll get into your mule deer hunt too, but right after you left and that weather changed, those elk that were coming down to water early, because we had my cousin-in-law, I guess you could call him, he wanted to kill an elk cow. Man, they were just not even moving until like, because it had cooled off so much that they weren't moving until like way later. So we got really lucky. Being that it was hot, those elk were coming down early to water, and then we just caught them way out, away, you know, further down from the mountaintop than they normally are.
Well, we were there 4 days, mm-hmm. and really, if we hadn't have gotten on that bull right there the very first morning, I think we only saw another herd with a similar bull that I might have had about a 30-second window to shoot at. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And and that would have been a really difficult situation.
And we were trying to plan around, I think, your niece's wedding or something, because we thought that was the time that Lori could come with you, your wife. And we were thinking that if we didn't get the elk then, that you were going
to
come back.
I'd have to come
back.
A
special trip to hunt elk again. So that was all the cards kind of fell together there. There was another bull that was behind that bull, I remember, that was narrower, but maybe a little bit more weight, but not as near as pretty of a bull mm-hmm. as that bull, because that was a pretty bull.
Yeah, so my bull was a 6x6 typical, scored mm-hmm. 340.
Right, it's a good
beautiful, Rocky, beautiful yeah. bull. I couldn't have been happier with
good it. Rocky Mountain elk there. And then we usually the mule deer hunting's not as difficult. We hunted hard for mule deer.
Yeah,
real
we did.
Hard for mule deer. We covered a lot of ground. It was kind of like, what, day 3 when we finally got the mule deer?
Yeah.
And the wind was bad.
Well, we got real lucky the first couple of days. The weather couldn't have been better.
Right.
It was beautiful. I mean, there wasn't a cloud in the sky. It was the bluest sky I've ever seen. The weather, the temperature was great.
Yeah, temps were good.
There was no wind,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to 2 years ago when I went with you and hunted antelope.
And
I shot a freaking antelope at 372 yards in a 30-mile-an-hour crosswind.
The whole Jeep was rocking. Trying to lean up on the Jeep, and the whole Jeep was rocking from the wind, but... Yeah, that day we killed your mule deer, that wind had started picking
it
up.
It had picked
afternoon.
Back up. Yeah. Well, and as a matter of fact, we would have never saw this deer.
Right.
I mean, we saw a deer that we put a stalk on but couldn't get to them before they spooked.
Yeah, we busted a couple of bucks that morning that just, man, I thought that they would kind of check up when they went across the draw after they busted us. They just left. I mean, like, hauling butt left, and that was my mistake because the wind was wrong when we went to them in the truck, and I think we just too much commotion and noise, and we probably got in too tight. I think they had
probably a little too close.
I think if we had just stopped about another 100 yards back, it would have been about a 200 yard shot, because that once we passed that kind of that buffer, I like to call it, like, they're gonna allow you so much room, and then that we just made them too uncomfortable, and then they just busted out. But then John went and bounced around in his Ranger or whatever and found that other buck bedded down.
Yeah. Well, and so he was, that was a perfect situation because he was actually out of the wind.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to be out of the wind. So we would have never saw him.
We couldn't have seen him any roads that we had driven. The only way we found him was because John found him for us. You know, he could get that little cart up on top of all those little hills. And then the three of us cramped in. And none of us are small people in that little single cab cart. And
drove up the hill
and
a couple hundred yards and then got out and walked.
And then John's dogs bailed out. And
oh, yeah.
Started following you and me. And he's yelling. He's thinking the deer's going to hear us and blow out. But he was right where John left him. And again, that was a situation where it had to be a pretty quick shot because you're limited on like how comfortable, because we got in within like, shoot, well, under 100
probably,
yards.
Yeah,
probably,
yeah, he was probably 80 60 yards. To 80 yards. He wasn't far.
And we just topped over the hill. And of course, he could see us plain as day. We're on the skyline. And we just, you got again on the sticks. And luckily, you've had good, you've experienced hunting off the sticks from hunting in Africa. Because a lot of people, it's not easy to get that balance point on those sticks. Yeah. But luckily, you've practiced a lot on it. So you pulled up on the sticks, and the only shot you had, he was laying down facing us. So you had to put it right there in his brisket, and you did. He, bam, you hit him, and he just rolled down the hill, and
yeah,
game over. But that was a beautiful – it had been a severely dry summer, so the antler growth hasn't been great up there. But it was – all in all, it was a good hunt. The mule deer was a beautiful trophy. The elk was an extremely beautiful trophy.
Absolutely.
And we had great weather, and we had a really good time. I really enjoyed you and Lori both being there.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love it for my wife to come hunting with me. I mean, you know, obviously, you know, a lot of guys don't like their wife coming. They like to go to deer camp and sit around and drink and do whatever. Mm-hmm. I actually enjoy my wife being there because she enjoys doing it.
She enjoys doing it with you.
Yeah.
And she didn't draw a tag this year, but you guys, when she draws, you know, you might have to take the back seat next time.
Yeah.
And then shooting prairie dogs is always fun.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, so I guess after we got our hunts done, then we went and went prairie dog town, got the 223 out, and got some practice off sticks with those.
That was a lot of good practice, and Lori actually really improved her shooting on the sticks. At first, she was a little slow, and then after 8 or 10 rounds, man, she was just plink, 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 popping them off. And you're not talking a very big target, and she was shooting, you know, 150, 200 yards out, knocking them back in their hole. And that's pretty impressive to do off the sticks. So you're not like over the hood or out the mirror or on a bench. That little probably 2.5 inch wide by 6 inch tall target's not a very big target.
No. Well, and you know, I'll tell you, I don't really like to shoot out of a vehicle anyway. I can't get comfortable enough. I'd rather be outside on the sticks.
Right.
I can shoot 10 times better than trying to finagle my way out a window.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
So, you know, it's good practice for anyone that does any type of, you know, challenging hunting to be able to practice to shoot off sticks.
Right. Yeah. I think sticks is a good tool. You know, bipods are great, but I'm not real good. I don't get real comfortable laying on my belly. Of course, my belly gets in the way, but I'm not real good shooting prone. Kyle Marsh practices a lot. He's good at shooting prone, but he does a lot of shooting competitions. A buddy of mine from up near Dallas, it comes down and comes something. But I'm just not I'm comfortable like on the sticks, on my, if I'm sitting on my butt using my knees or using sticks, if I'm sitting on my butt, that's where I'm comfortable because then I can kind of lock my elbows in on my knees, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I agree with you. Sometimes shooting, like in Texas, we're lucky because we can shoot out of the vehicle. But shooting off the top of the vehicle or out the front window is not always comfortable for a lot of people because those Jeeps are pretty small, you know?
Yeah. Well, especially if you're on the right-hand side. Like, you're on the left-hand side, it's easier to point your gun out.
Right, because I'm right-handed. Yeah,
but if you're sitting in the passenger seat trying to get your rifle positioned out the window, you know, and get anything to lean on is almost impossible for me.
Right, right.
But it was a fantastic hunt. My deer was an old, good old deer.
Good old deer to take.
And he was still, what, about 8 or 10 point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was a nice 4x4, barely a 4x4, but nice buck. So, yeah, he had brow tines, 10 point buck.
Yeah.
Nice and wide,
you know.
And then, man, right after you left, the weather, it changed. It got cold, and I saw a lot more deer, not a lot of bucks that were better than yours. We've had some hard years on mule deer up there. But then I had an elk cow tag, and I was going to stick around and hunt for one of those, and there was a bad storm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, think I'm going to go home. I was like, we had enough weather in Texas last year. That I've played in the snow before. I didn't need to play in the snow anymore.
Well, did you spend one night in that cabin up there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went and me and Josh and Adam stayed up there. But it wasn't that cold that night, so it wasn't bad.
Oh, really?
It was actually a little hot. We turned on one Coleman lantern. It heated that whole thing up. But I wouldn't have wanted to be in that cabin during that snowstorm because there's no heat in there other than like a little Coleman.
There was no electricity. There was no nothing.
Water, no electricity. But it was kind of fun to do it with the young guys. That's definitely a young man's game.
Yeah.
Well, tell me, so right after, well, let's talk about your caliber. You shot you got a new 300 Win Mag you brought up.
300 Win Mag, I put it together. Buddy of mine that does a lot of shooting, and he's a big gun.
Dewey McTee.
I give him a lot of credit for really making me a better hunter and just a more knowledgeable shooter in general. Mm-hmm. And he helped me put this 300 Win Mag together with a Leupold fire dot scope on it, and had some bullets custom made for it. He knows a guy in South Carolina that builds custom ammo, and what he'll do is he'll put a test box together and send a test box of four or five rounds of four or five different bullets.
Right, different weights and then different powder loads. Yeah, I'm just trying to make it group better.
Yeah,
right.
So we took that rifle down to Dewey's Ranch in Tilden, and we shot my test box until we found the ones that rifle liked.
Right.
And I'm a believer, and this is another thing that young or even inexperienced hunters don't realize. You know, you can't just go to Academy and buy a box of shells and think your gun's going to shoot them.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, it just doesn't happen that way.
Mm-hmm. You can buy three of the exact same gun, and each of those guns may like a different type or either brand or weight of bullet differently.
Correct. Yeah, so it was very important for me to find the right bullet that rifle wanted to shoot, which we did, and then I was able to order them. Mm-hmm. And then that's the ammo that I used. And it's when you're shooting at that kind of distance, there's no room for error.
And it builds you a lot of confidence knowing that ammo and that gun and practicing with that gun helps build that confidence. A lot of guys just don't practice enough either.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you can't not practice. Because here's the thing, and I've done it, and everybody's done it that spent any time hunting. If you wound an animal and that animal takes off, and especially out there on the plains like that in mm-hmm. Wyoming, an elk, if it hadn't been a kill shot, that animal would have been wounded, and he would have ran 5 miles and would have never found him.
Right, right.
And that's the last thing you want to do, regardless of where you're hunting.
Yes, and it's you lose sleep at night. You always question yourself. It's just better to practice and go out there with the confidence. And mistakes do get made. I've made mistakes, but you can take a lot of that error out mm-hmm. by doing what you just said, practicing, and then making sure you have the right ammo and the right caliber for what you're hunting, and that you're confident in that shot. You know,
absolutely.
And you've made every shot you've made with me has been excellent. So I have no complaints with that at all. I get some guys that'll whiff one at 80 yards. I'm looking at them like, how did you do that? you didn't miss the barn. You didn't miss the deer. You couldn't have hit the barn. But
exactly. Well, I mean, here's the thing, too. I mean, and like I said, if you spend any time hunting, you're going to wound an animal. It's just inevitable. And that's the worst feeling in the world, to go to bed
definitely
knowing that you didn't find it. Mm-hmm. And so then you have to get up the next morning and start hunting.
And even as a hunter, even though we like to hunt and take trophies or kill animals, we don't want them to suffer. We want it to make an ethical, clean shot, because we don't want that animal laying out there suffering at night with a gut shot or something. You know, we want to make a good, clean kill and have, you know, that makes the meat better. Everything's better. So shortly after you guys were with me in Wyoming, y'all left for Africa like a week later?
It was the end of the month, about 3 weeks later. And this trip, long story short, we were actually supposed to have gone to Tanzania mm-hmm. in 2020, mm-hmm. Before COVID struck.
Right.
And we had booked these flights to go to Tanzania in February of 2020, and freaking literally 1 month later, in March of 2020, mm-hmm. there's COVID.
Right.
Okay. And, you know, we're still not done with this crap. And so long story short, obviously our trip got canceled. Mm-hmm. So last year when South Africa opened up, I was able, and Delta started flying back to Johannesburg, and the COVID restrictions lightened up a little bit, and you could get into South Africa.
Right.
Of course, you have to have the negative COVID test in the whole nine yards. Mm-hmm. But we were able to rebook these tickets and before our flight credits ran out, and mm-hmm. I'd lost about 11 grand.
Right. You took your daughter, right?
Yeah, I took my daughter, my 30-year-old daughter.
How old is your daughter?
30.
Was that her first time?
It was the first time to Africa.
Wow.
Yeah, never been to Africa. And my fourth time to Africa. So long story short, we were able to fly into South Africa and get with my outfitter, and we spent 7 days on the ground. And so we were just basically trying to get that trip in before we lost our flight credit. And nobody even knew that, you know, we were going to have a second and third wave of COVID.
Right.
And now no one can even get in and out of there right this minute.
Right.
So it's a travesty.
What's a blessing that y'all got to go? So what all did you, what all trophies did y'all hunt, or what all animals did y'all hunt?
So I hunted a Cape buffalo, which was my main animal that I was going to hunt. And I don't know if I told you about my Cape buffalo story the last
time. You told me the last one, that you wounded it and had to search for it and all that.
Two and a half days. There's a prime example.
Right.
Didn't make a good shot. Wounded an animal. Spent the next 2.5 days trying to find it. And so I definitely was not going to make that mistake again.
You kind of wanted to redeem your Cape buffalo.
Absolutely. I wanted to redeem my hunt.
Gotcha.
And so we got on the ground the very first morning we were there. And in Africa, at that time of year, you're coming into their summer season.
Right. It's getting starting to get hot.
It gets hot. It's by 10 o'clock in the morning. It's hot. Mm-hmm. The animals lay down. So we were up at 4 o'clock in the morning and to the concession where we were going to hunt by 5, mm-hmm. which is when the sun comes up.
Right.
So, you know, which is way past, you know, that's way earlier than I ever imagined, you know, getting out of bed.
Especially in Africa.
Yeah.
Usually it's like 7 or 8 o'clock and you eat breakfast.
Yeah. So we got on the ground and put the stalk on two or three individual buffaloes to get a good look at them. Got within about 30 yards of one that was laying down and we wanted to get a look at his horns. So me and my PH and my tracker, we with the wind, got within about 30 yards of him, and then the tracker clapped him up, and my PH said, okay, he's going to stand, and he's going to look at us, and we're going to look at his horns, and we're going to make a decision.
Right.
And so sure enough, that buffalo stood up, he whirled around, he looked at us, and immediately started snorting and blowing.
Yeah, because you're making him uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah.
And they can charge, right, without even being shot at.
We're within 30 yards.
Yeah, he can charge without even being shot at. You're just in his territory. Yeah.
And so I'm on sticks once again, this time with a .375 caliber.
Right.
And so my PA says, just keep the gun on him. And sure enough, he mock charges and comes in, you know, about 10 to 15 feet towards us. And I mean, my adrenaline was just fucking blowing.
If it's not, you must be dead.
Yeah. And so I'm like, oh, my God. I said, okay, Ronald, he does that again, this is going to be the one.
Right.
Because I'm gonna waste him.
Right.
And so sure enough, the tracker starts whistling and hollering at him, and the buffalo decided he didn't want none of it. So he turned tail and took off.
Oh, wow. That's
Yeah,
but make the hair on the back of your neck stand up.
But that's the very closest I've been to being run over by a buffalo.
That's close enough.
So anyway, we got on another couple of buffalo again, long stalk, about 300 or 400 yard stalk, with the wind the right direction. Got on sticks again within about 100 yards of these two buffalo, and waited for the one that I was looking for to turn, give me his shoulder, and this time I made a clean shot and hit him through the lungs.
Perfect.
And of course, it doesn't matter. You're not going to drop a buffalo. It's going to take off.
Right.
And sure enough, it took off. And I said, I know I hit it good. And but he took off running, and I shot again, missed, hit a tree, and we gave it about 15 or 20 minutes. We just said, let's just let him sit.
Right.
And push him. Gave him about 15 or 20 minutes, and then we went walking, and he had ran about 300 yards.
Wow.
With the other buffalo. Mm-hmm. And had dropped right before, I mean literally right before, he got into a massive thicket of thorns.
Wow.
And when we got there, his buddy, the other buffalo, was still standing right there next to him.
Yep.
And snorting at us. He took off. And I dropped him, I shot him through the lungs, but it took him 300 yards to drown.
That's a big set of lungs. That's a big animal.
Yeah. So, I mean, he drowned in his own blood, but it took 300 yards to get there. Mm-hmm. And I was just thankful. I mean, I said a prayer right there that number one, I made a good shot. And number two, he didn't get in those thorns.
Right. what else did you hunt over there?
So my wife was with me on this hunt, and, she was going to hunt a golden wildebeest, a black impala, and then we found her another blessed buck species called a saddleback blessed buck, which is a beautiful, it's a white blessed buck with a brown marking on its back that looks like a saddle.
I'll be darned.
So we went hunting wildebeest, and I hunted with a species called a king wildebeest.
Okay.
And so we put my wife on the golden first, and she made a good clean shot on the golden wildebeest. Beautiful, beautiful animal.
And just for our listeners, that's actually a blue wildebeest, but it's different color variations.
Yeah, like
they've bred different color variations in those herds now.
Yeah, so essentially you have a blue wildebeest, you have a black wildebeest, you have a golden wildebeest, you have a king wildebeest.
Right.
Those are basically your four types of wildebeest.
The black and the blue is two totally opposite species, but then the golden comes from the blue and the king comes from the blue. Similar horns, same horns, just different.
Same horn, different configuration.
Color variations, right.
Black wildebeest has much different horns.
Yeah, they're smaller bodied too.
Yeah.
Have you ever killed one of those?
I've not hunted black wildebeest.
I want to go back to the Eastern Cape when all this craziness goes away and go. That was one of the first animals I took in Africa a long, long time ago. And they're funny because they look huge, and you get to them, and they almost shrink on you. Like, they're small-bodied, very small-bodied. So compared to a blue, they're not near as big a body.
Yeah, but I will tell you this. I mean, there's a lot of animals you can hunt in Africa that are not challenging hunts because the animals are docile. Mm-hmm. Okay, wildebeest is not one of them.
No, no.
Okay, they run in herds.
I was snorting.
They never stop. Mm-hmm. They never stop. And they run in herds, and inevitably the one that you're trying to shoot is always in behind, or there's one in front, or somewhere something's messing it up.
Yeah.
So that wildebeest hunt is a very challenging hunt.
It is, and they're almost crazy. Like, they're always swishing their tail and swishing their head and running in a circle, and one of them snorts, and they all thunder off and try to get back on them, and they do it again and again. Oh, it can be very challenging to get that done.
So I shot mine off the top of the truck, safari style, off the top of the truck,
right,
at about 250 yards. Again, made a very nice, good, clean kill shot. He ran about 100 yards and dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And then my wife shot hers off sticks.
Cool.
That's a perfect example. I mean, these wildebeest kept running back and forth, back and forth. She couldn't get on the one that she was supposed to be on. It took her about 30 or 45 minutes to get off the shot.
Right.
To make sure it was a good shot.
It's a good thing we did all that practicing in Wyoming right before y'all went, because she had said she hadn't shot in a while. It had been a while because she stays so busy working all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Did your daughter hunt anything, or she just kind of
hunted? No. After the buffalo hunt, she pretty much decided she wasn't going to hunt anything. she was, a little taken aback. First safari,
mm-hmm.
She was a little taken aback of, an animal died.
Mm-hmm.
And for some people, that's traumatizing.
Right.
But that's part of hunting. So she didn't take any interest in that, but she did come out. She was a trooper. She came out hunting with us.
But y'all did some touring after y'all's hunt, too.
I'll tell you the coolest thing that we did. The very coolest thing we did. Went to a lion park.
Oh, I saw those pictures. Yeah, that looked pretty awesome.
And this particular lion park is not like lions, because we also went to another lion park where they're in pens.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of cool because it was feeding day, and so they drive a truck through an area and throw these big frozen chunks of meat over the fence,
mm-hmm.
and the lions, go after the meat. That was cool enough to watch. But anyway, the very coolest thing we did is we went to this particular lion park where they have guys that work with these lions since they're 6-month-old cubs.
Mm-hmm.
And they train them to walk with humans.
Huh.
And so we actually walked with three grown male lions.
Yeah, I saw the pictures. They're big cats.
Yeah, one of them was 7 years old, another one was five, and another one was three or four.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all brothers or stepbrothers of... had the same father with different mothers.
Yeah, half-brothers or, yeah.
And so what you find out, and this is another thing, is lions are social creatures.
Right.
Okay, lion is the only social cat that you can do this with.
Right.
Because a lion lives in a pride.
Mm-hmm.
And they show affection to each other. And they're constantly, rubbing on each other and growling each other and stuff. Mm-hmm. But that's the way they show affection.
Right.
You can't do that with a leopard or a tiger or any other type of big cat, because those animals are solitary animals.
Right.
So these lions are trained to accept humans into you know, as if we're in their pride.
Like you're part of the pride.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Now, they're trained, obviously, you know, like you would train a dog, and they're given, there's a guy with a bag of chickens, and, you know, and when the lion does something good, he throws him a chicken.
Right.
Sorry,
everybody, the dogs are all wanting in and crowding around us.
But we essentially were able to walk with these lions, and they walked in the front, we walked in the back. And, of course, the trainers, the guys that work with them are there, controlling them. But right. they're wild. It's a 500-pound wild animal.
Right.
I mean, if he wants to, he can kill anybody.
You're right. Yeah.
At any time.
Yep.
So that was probably the coolest experience I've ever had.
And then y'all went to Sun City or somewhere?
Yeah, we went to a place called Sun City, which is like a mini Vegas.
Right. They've got, like, giraffes and stuff out and... I've been there. It's just been a long time since I've been there.
Yeah. It was cool. It was like a mini Vegas. They had a big, big water park with a bunch of slides.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter really enjoyed that. And really, really swanky hotel. We had a nice meal.
You enjoyed that. It was, I always tell people when you go to Africa, like, not just to go for the hunt, to try to maybe add on something cool like that, like walking with the lions or going to Kruger National Park or whatever. Just something just so you can...
Yeah.
I say take more of the culture and the country in, you know?
Well, I will tell you this. The very first time we went, it was a safari. I was there for 10 days, and we were there to hunt, and that's all we did.
Right.
But the second time, we hunted for half the time, and then my wife and I went to Cape Town.
That's pretty down there.
We also went to Zimbabwe and saw the Victoria Falls.
That's pretty cool, too.
So, you know, we have done some other things other than just hunt.
Right.
And so it's always nice to do that, but... Africa is a special place. Like I said, I mean, it's got a special place in my heart, and our friends there, they're like family.
Right. You kind of become that way, I think,
with
people there. Well, just hunting in general, and it's a special place for me. I tell people all the time, they'll say, well, I want to go one time. I'm like, it's impossible to just go once.
Yeah.
You go once, and you get home, and you start thinking, like, all the stuff that you either wanted to hunt or go to a different part of Africa, because Africa is so diverse and all over. I don't think you can physically just eat one chip.
Well,
it's hard to just go once. It's not. It's a place that if you're an avid hunter, that you will have to return to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, when people tell me, "Oh man, that was a trip of a lifetime." Well, to me, it was a trip,
right?
Because it's not because I've done it four times,
right?
And I've been blessed, and we've done well, and so we've been able to take those trips. But yeah, it's definitely a place that you got to go back to more than once.
Yeah. Okay, everybody, we're going to wrap it up here with Russell. Thanks for listening and take care. Russell, thanks for joining us again and sharing your story and your knowledge and all that, man.
I don't know what our next adventure is going to be. We're going to have to come up with it.
We'll plan something, man.
All right. All right. Thank you.
Right.